Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for May 25th, 2020. I almost said November.
It's the feast day of the Venerable Bede.
You mean the Venomous Bede?
Who wrote the history of the English people back in the day? Back in the 8th century.
We sang his song Ascension Day.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
When we were celebrating the Ascension, unlike all the people, wicked people, who weren't celebrating on Thursday. Because we're properly Anglican and liturgical. And so it's also Memorial Day.
Yeah, yeah, so two things. But so this day... 5 years ago, was it? Your grandfather?
This day, 5 years ago, my grandfather and grandmother, who have been, last week was their 76th wedding anniversary.
Yeah, so that's just amazing. He's, how old is he now? He's like 96.
I think he's 97. I think she's, or maybe she's 97. They're 96 and 97 and 97 and 98. But 5 years ago, he was given, along with all the other living fighter aces from all the wars,
yeah,
the Congressional Medal of Freedom. Is that right?
I think something like that. But he had to. I don't think it was Medal of Freedom. Isn't that what Bachelor Mark got from?
Well, there's the presidential one, but there's the congressional one.
Okay. Well, but it's for civilian stuff, isn't it?
Oh.
So I think it's something else. But
okay. Well, it was really obviously a big deal since we remember what it was. Yeah. No, but I mean, it was a big deal because we went and
it was really nice.
Yeah. So cool.
A bunch of the men who were still living after. I mean, I was surprised there were so many.
Yeah.
Living people were certified aces. That means you have to have at least 9. enemy planes shot down, confirmed. I'm sorry, at least 5. And your grandpa had 9.
Yeah, he had 9. So.
He was a Navy pilot flying off aircraft carriers.
Yeah.
And he told us his story. I'm so mad because we sat down, they came to visit us and we went to Washington, D.C. from Binghamton. And we sat down with him and he told us.
A lot of stuff into your phone.
Into my phone, and I got a new phone. And I forgot that it was there, so I don't even know if I can recover it.
Yeah,
he talked about dogfights, what it was like to shoot and be shot at. It was just amazing.
I mean, the only part I remember is how they would, when a plane was about to go up in flames and they were pushing it off the aircraft carrier, they would rush out and try to get the clock out of the plane, but then they would get in big trouble for doing that because they could also die. But the clock was so cool. That's the part I remember. I was able to understand that part, the emotional attachment to a clock, sort of far outweighed all the other stuff.
Well, he told me, but I remember one shoot down that he told me about. This Japanese Zero was just shot up in front of his cockpit, like 30 yards away, and he shot probably further away than that, but he shot and he got it and just barely missed being hit himself as he was passing through it.
Yeah. He was unscheduled to go into the invasion of Japan,
right?
But then, so he was in a lot of major battles,
right.
And he also was a new Christian. Mm-hmm. So apparently, and I don't know he's in his late 90s, so I don't know what his memory of his youth is like, but he was a new Christian, and he said that other pilots would put a beer in the slot. There's this great slot where you could put
a beer.
But he was a new Christian, so he put Coca-Cola. And I thought, well, that may have been why you did so well.
And all the others
just like beer. A pro tip. I mean, I can see how the beer would help, but
calm one's nerves, but it could also be too calming.
Maybe the Coca-Cola was better for you. Anyway.
What didn't Coke have cocaine back then?
Oh, maybe it did. I mean, I don't know if that's really true either.
Earlier.
I can't believe that they would let them have cocaine. So
I remember that story, and it's interesting. It is. I know that billions of things have been said about that generation, but it is interesting that he didn't. From what you tell me, he didn't come back and with like a bunch of angst and
well, he didn't come back with a bunch of angst, but I think he did come back with there were certain things that people who endured that didn't want to do, which was talk about it. He didn't talk about it to my grandmother. He had horrible dreams for years and years and years. And I think he got to be a kind of crotchety, and he was kind of on edge, you know. But they went straight to Africa after that and were missionaries in Nigeria and then South Africa and then Belgium for their whole adult professional lives. And they did just get on with it. You know, you don't inquire too deeply into your feelings about anything. You show up for your country and then you show up for the gospel.
Yeah.
And you don't talk about it too much. So that was amazing, but I don't think it's bad to talk about things.
No, it's just interesting that I guess the mentality of that generation was not say anything. And it may have been better for the whole country had they said stuff, but just because I think the generation after them grew up in an idyllic.
Yeah. And didn't know what it had cost. That's true.
Did not know what their parents had done.
Didn't know the psychological and emotional and spiritual costs of what. Yeah. And so we're able to pretty quickly take it all for granted.
An entitlement kind of attitude of the boomer
group. Yeah. That's interesting. I really want to read that book. I don't even know what it's called, and I think it's like 1,000 pages, but somebody tried to work out the cycle of generations. There's a four-generation cycle that repeats over and over and over again, and tries to trace it through history, which I don't think you can really do, but if anybody knows what that book is called, could you just let me know? I'd really love to read that book. I don't even know how to Google it. Well, I think it's really important to suck it up and just get on with life. But instead of doing that, we thought we'd air our feelings. No. how is COVID impacting your life?
I thought we were going to talk about what it was going to be like.
That's right. What's the new normal going to be?
What's the new normal going to be, right? And
I think it's going to be just like old normal.
I know people were saying, "Oh, it's going to be such a dramatic change. We've been out of circulation for 4 months." I think everything's going to go back to normal really quickly. And I'm going to pull out my reams of economic education.
Oh my gosh!
And prognosticate here because I know a lot about economics and numbers and stuff. And what's going to happen? I think the economy is going to bounce back very easily because. I mean, I do think the stimulus package was really a good idea because it kept money in the system. And apparently, I read this once.
in some random website that you don't...
The problem in the Depression was the government didn't do anything to remedy the lack of money circulating. And so that's why everything crashed and burned. But if the government had like infused cash into the system or money into the system, real money, not just like... deficit, not just like printing money, just print money, but just actual real money. There would have been
I don't believe it. It just seems like a good money... idea.
And plus, we got a lot of money from that stimulus package.
So you feel like it's
in that way, heart, I think we could be changed.
Your heart tells you it's good.
It's very selfish, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the money is real.
Right.
I feel like it could actually not be real.
But I. It might be. Okay, so I think we're, but anyway, I think we're going to go back to work. I think all people have been laid off, a lot of them. I think jobs are going to be popping back up because I don't think any business wants to really close. Most businesses want to stay open and try and survive. So
a lot already have closed.
And I know, but there's going to be those that have closed. There's going to be niches for new ones to start. I think there's going to be a revival of the economy and things are going to be well, and the unemployment rate's going to go back down. It was really good before the COVID hit. We were having really low unemployment, if I remember reading the numbers right.
Which I'm sure you totally did. I'm sure you read those numbers like a pro. I mean, I don't know about the economy. I feel like my heart tells me literally nothing about the economy. I don't even know. But I think that there's been, I've noticed it. I've kind of settled into the whole COVID world. And so I was thinking about having to wake up and go to church on Sunday again.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh, like, first of all, I'm not going to fit into my church clothes. That's going to be the whole world going back to church and work is going to have a new wardrobe because I don't think I fit anything anymore. And then I haven't smeared a lacquer of makeup on my face for 4 months. This is a kind of the smaller stuff. I bet this will change the beauty standards. It'll all go more natural than.
And larger.
Well, yeah. Plump will be back in.
Back to the Renaissance.
Yes, the Renaissance. But also just a more natural makeup look because I don't know. I don't even know if I remember how to put any of it back on my face. And I'm not sure if I'm supposed to. Like, I don't want to go to church with, you know, a heavy, thick layer of trying to cover up my gray face when everybody else has gone the natural look. So I'm interested in beauty trends through COVID. I saw one H&M is offering a dress that's basically shaped like a big plastic bag. And I'm wondering if
that's what
if
you
want, that's going to be the thing that everybody runs out and buys. But also, I think there's going to be lasting consequences, like shaking hands. I think will be I think it's small stuff. I feel like that will go away. Potentially, school for children.
Well,
will
yeah,
that go away forever?
I was you were reading right that
it's the little things
that the. There's estimates that up to 30% of.
Well, somebody told me that the school system in New York is a little worried that a huge number of children will not come back when they try to open in the fall, and they may not be able to open in the fall. It may have to still be distance, and so people are going to go ahead and make other arrangements because they can't deal with that kind of uncertainty.
I mean, the only good thing that would come out of that is to. I mean, the good thing would be one more kid's not exposed to the sex education of the schools and some of the indoctrination. But also, it might force the schools to have to compete. You know,
this might,
to get people back. You know,
right. This might bring about the school choice that we've always wanted.
Right.
I do think, but the problem I think is that. It does, not so many people cannot and should not try to homeschool. And I don't think it will be good for the homeschooling movement to suddenly have the whole world trying to do that if they shouldn't be. You know, there's reasons not to homeschool. Like public school can be bad, but. Homeschooling can be bad if you're not really equipped for it. I mean, most of us aren't really equipped, but if you haven't thought it through, if you don't really have good reasons to do it, if you don't enjoy being around your children all day, I think it could potentially be catastrophic for a lot of children who maybe would help them to be out of their houses for 8 hours a day while their parents go to work.
Yeah.
Maybe not. But I don't think that Americans are good at family life anymore. And that's what you really need if you're going to homeschool, is a good family life. If you aren't not, if you haven't cultivated that,
it's going to be tough.
I'm pretty sure that COVID didn't give that to you as a little gift. You're probably still bad at family life when this is all over. And if you think that homeschooling is going to be great in a family that's pretty dysfunctional, if you are constantly angry with your kids, if you and your spouse fight all the time, if your children don't obey you, like homeschooling works if children obey, but most people now don't know how to teach their children to obey. So I don't know. I don't think the homeschooling thing is like this exultant, wondrous, cure all, for society's ills. I have anxiety about that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I you know, okay, true. But I mean, I think in all circumstances, it'd be better for parents to be with kids than non-parents to be with kids most of the time. So if there's something that comes, if that's the end result, that more kids are home with their parents for a longer time, even if it's not ideal, it's better.
You think it's better?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, listen to what the statists are saying during this whole shutdown. Like, oh no, more women are going to be beaten by their horrible husbands. There's going to be more child abuse because people are home. And so they're using it. We need to get every kid out of the home into our schools is kind of what the far left is saying. Because it's just abusive and tyrannical. And that's, well, why stop? Just that's the kind of argument you hear from people who just want to end homeschooling altogether. So this will make
that Harvard professor person who keeps trying to push it.
Yeah, well, this will make it harder, I think.
To
end. I mean, there's a number of people not going back to school will make it.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
It'll be really good for homeschoolers.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I mean, I have enjoyed the. Okay, here's one thing I hope will happen, but I don't think it will. The new normal. I would hope that women in particular would reevaluate their lives as a result of COVID and decide that caring for the people in their families in a practical way, like, you know, it sounds maybe traditional, but I think that caring for people is a lot more important than earning lots and lots of money. And our culture has absolutely chucked that value out of the window, largely because it's associated with women and and it's better to go be a nurse in a hospital than to care or say homeschool your own children. Mm. Like there's no cultural value for women to care for their own families. It's better for them to be in the workforce. That's what we've accepted that unquestioningly. And I'm not trying to be get the women back in the house and get them to quit their jobs, that, you know, but I do think that women have been sold a huge number of lies about what will make them happy and about the value of their own families. And I would hope that women would be stuck home with their kids. And in a secret way that they would never be able to say out loud, because that would be horrific, would discover that they enjoyed the slower pace. They liked being with their kids. They didn't want to go back into the rat race. They just quietly did the thing that they, you know, like, I don't know. Why do women have to work so freaking hard?
Yeah.
You know, why
can't? One thing that, you know, it's one thing if you can't afford to do otherwise. Like if you're a single mother or your husband makes
no money,
right? Very little money. You have no choice. So we're not talking about that.
I'm talking about the people who are well off enough that, so I just read about a woman who she owned her own company and I think she was getting slammed online. She wrote that, her husband's job during COVID was so stressful and the needs of the kids were so big that she just shut her company down and thought, I'm just going to take care of my kids and I'm not going to apologize for it. Well, everybody was like, how dare you? How dare you?
They're angry with her. It wasn't just a choice you could make as a woman being free.
And I thought, man, choice. I'm for choice.
Yeah.
How great to not try to juggle 1,500 things, because the care of the family is still going to be on you anyway. Like, if you and your husband work full time, it's on you. We've gotten over the idea that, like, it can ever be 50-50. It never is. But what if your family was worthwhile enough, valuable enough to you that you, and your own sanity was important enough to you that you were like, you know what?
Yeah.
Never mind. I don't want to do that job right now. I'll go back to it some other time when I have more.
And we don't mean to say that, okay, so some women just have made that choice and they've made it work for their kids and their families. And so we're not saying that they're horrible, wicked people. Just, well, any more than we're all.
I mean, we're all horrible, wicked people. I'm not saying that.
right. But I just, it would be nice if.
If we actually had choice. We could
shift priorities over too as a culture and see that as. See the home as the center of civilization rather than the school or workplace. And I think that's what's happened is it gradually, you know, what you do outside the home
is more important than what you do inside.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's for men too. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think more men should work from home too. And I think some women probably should work and the men should look after the children and homeschool them, because if their wives did it, it would be a total failure. So it's not really, I guess I'm not really saying, I'm not trying to make a big gender pronouncement at all, or about the value of, like, if you really love your job and you get to have it back after COVID and you hate being home with your kids, oh my gosh, go back to your job. But I know that a lot of women secretly
are exhausted
by feeling like they need to have 1,500 side hustles if they don't work.
Yeah.
Or they've got to homeschool if they don't work, because why would you just stay home with your kids? That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Don't women, they feel guilty. It's kind of like,
oh, I feel guilty.
It's a lazy, they feel lazy.
Yeah.
Right?
Is it? How dare I? I should.
Which is just strange to me. I don't understand the guilt. My mom stayed home with me and my sister.
I know. And I can't tell you how jealous that makes me. Like,
without, I don't think she felt any twinge of conscience or, I mean.
No, nor should she have.
Yeah, she worked really hard and.
But she also had a pretty, like, she had a lovely life. She was able to create beautiful things because she had the mental space to do it. And I think that if COVID has slowed you down and given you some time, that you shouldn't feel bad about that. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, she did stuff outside this. She worked at the church. She did, like, she was an aerobics instructor.
I mean, that's the thing, though, is that she had time. Like, the church benefits from women who have time, who aren't so stretched and thinned out by a culture that insists that it needs their money. Mm-hmm. I don't really buy the economics of America much anymore. I think that, you know, wealth is good and important, but I think we've sold away a lot of things that should have been more valuable than the money that we could have made, or we did make.
Yeah. I mean, it's, well, okay. So let's say, let's say that there's a significant drop in the public school participation level. Okay, so in that sense, I could see things not going back to normal. There could be kind of maybe a reset of some sort in families. And
yeah, I mean, there's potential, although I don't think there will be. I think we'll do what you said, which is just to rush back in and start doing everything exactly the same way we did it before without any thought whatsoever. Yeah. I'm sure that's going to be what happens. So, okay. So I'm sure that there's also, I have like this sort of feeling that things are going to be different in the church for a while.
Yeah.
Because
when you go back, it's not going to be like it was, because you have to still do the safety things.
Yeah.
it's going to be really time consuming on the part of people trying to arrange services to figure out how to do it.
Yep.
So I think you said, you know, already my workload for the COVID era
is twice is to three times
dramatically more than it has been. I've not had, I mean, I've enjoyed being home. I'm an introvert, but
it's much harder.
Yeah. And I'm not sure exactly why. I mean, I know part of it's the technology, and part of it's, but there's been a lot more counseling issues that have had to come up.
Mm-hmm.
I've had much more pastoral work to do than normal. And I don't think it's going to get easier when we start meeting. I think it's going to get harder.
Yeah, I think it's going to get harder. Because all of the, I mean, we know a lot of the meltdowns now, but some of the meltdowns that we didn't know about, we're going to know about when we can finally meet again together. And that's going to need, you know, real attention. And then getting back together is going to be practically really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be tough to juggle that. And then, well, I was just thinking about, like, I've completely shed our Sunday school program from my mind right now. But that's because I'm trying to finish my book. But I don't have any idea. I suppose I should start trying to read what other people are doing. I don't have any idea about how I'm going to bring that back in the fall. Because you can do distance Sunday school, adult Sunday school. You can do that. You can continue to teach and feed the adults of your congregation. But we have a very robust
mm-hmm.
children's program. And, well, every time I start to think about that, I just shove it down where the light don't shine because I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that it becomes clear how to open. I don't know how to do that in a distance way. It's not supposed to be distance. It's supposed
New York embodied, State is part of the way, you know, we're in New York State classified churches in phase four, along with bars and restaurants are in phase three.
But yeah, bars and restaurants go ahead of us.
We go after phase four. We're like leisure time activities. Like,
yeah. That's deeply immoral. It's wicked to classify us in the same category. Yeah.
So what is it, Connecticut that had churches in phase one?
No, Massachusetts had churches in phase one because they, for some reason, I mean, so there must be a Christian somewhere in there who was like, hey guys,
this is kind of important.
You can't do that.
So that means we open up on the 28th of June. June, okay.
If things don't reset back, like if our number of cases continues to be within a certain range, then we will get to open the end of June with restrictions. Of course, everybody has restrictions. It's not the restrictions that troubles me. It's the that we would be put in that
category. Can go out to a restaurant or go to a bar where people are, I mean, I'm sorry. That's like a bar is where people, you know, hook up and things. And so we can't go to church where people are like,
well, they probably just are going for a drink. You shouldn't judge the entire American population.
Well, I mean, does that include nightclubs? Like dance clubs? I mean,
well, I don't think people can dance in close proximity. Do we do that in Binghamton? Are there things like that in Binghamton?
I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if that's a thing anymore. Like when it was,
yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure you just really dated yourself right there.
Well, I remember listening to tapes on the way to the dance club.
It's a dance club.
But I didn't dance. We went to them, but I didn't ever dance. But
that's really...
Because I hated the music. There's always a pop music. Anyway.
Maybe we should talk about how technology is going to change everything now because of COVID. But everybody's already talked about
that. Yeah, everyone's already talked about that. But I am glad because our church is now up to snuff on tech. So we can live stream things in a way we never could before. Not, of course, our Bible studies, which fail and fall apart every time we try to start them, but the church service itself has been good. Well done.
I mean, the Bible studies are good. It's just that you fall offline every few minutes.
Yeah.
So that's so great. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I would have hoped that the whole world would have paused as a result of COVID and learned the deep spiritual lessons of truth and grace and forgiveness and kindness. But I feel like the lessons that we have probably learned are rage, fear, self-loathing, scolding, anxiety about money, and judgmentalism.
Yes, yes.
Judgmental legalism. So
hopefully, the one good thing about New York State being the 28th of June for churches is that possibly by then the whole mask rite will be done. So we don't have to come back and hate each other because of masks. Which would be nice.
I mean, no, we're going to have to wear masks.
No, I know, but I mean, hoping the heat of the fight will have gone away. People aren't going to care so much.
Because they'll have gotten used to wearing masks.
Or not,
one or the other. Maybe. I don't think you should get your hopes up for anything.
Hoping that time makes everything better, like it always does.
That's
like we tell our marriage counseling people: if you just, when you're mad at somebody, just shove it right down there in a dark place, and over time it'll just go away.
Yeah, don't deal with anything head on. Just wait a long time, bitterly, and then it'll be fine. Works every time. I'm trying not to be anxious because of, on account of what Jesus commanded me not to be anxious, but I also feel like that command is stupid.
What? It's the Bible.
I know, but I feel like Jesus didn't really know how bad it was going to get when he said that, so... If he had
so
known,
you are saying
our Lord suffering,
and Savior, the omniscient God, was not thinking things through.
Yeah, he didn't know our present circumstances. If he doesn't know, there's no suffering like our suffering. If he but knew how bad it could be, he would have moderated.
I don't think he was saying don't feel anxiety. He was saying, like, don't let anxiety take over you.
I think that's a distinction without a difference.
No, it's not. No, it's no. If you act out of anxiety, that's when you're doing stupid things because you're letting worry and fear control you. But if you just feel worry and fear, that can't be a sin because Jesus felt fear in the Garden of Gethsemane, and so did, and Paul had anxiety for all the churches, he says. So, although Paul was a sinner, but I think it's totally fine to feel anxiety. Just don't act on it like you always do.
Oh, sure. Feelings are the most real things there are, so you must act on your feelings. And what I think is best to do during COVID is, if you are upset about something, don't ask for help. What you do is you go into an online forum or even in person, go stand in front of somebody's house and shout accusations at them for ruining your life. That's my preferred. It's better always to accuse other people of failing than to ask for help yourself. That's a baseline. Don't ever ask for help. If somebody has seen that you needed help or didn't see that you needed help, you go in and accuse them of being wrong. I tried it myself this week and it worked really well. So.
Yeah, that's good.
Don't ever humble yourself and ask for help, ever. That's ridiculous.
Didn't we have a third thing to talk about?
We were going to talk about the end of school. I keep reading articles about how college is over.
That's like, ridiculous. No, I don't think college is over. I do think distance learning is probably cheaper for everybody.
But that just turns every university into the University of Phoenix.
This is true, but I think it's cheaper for everybody to do it that way, don't you? Even for public schools, it's cheaper.
But again, with the money thing, like money has to be a calculus, but it shouldn't be the only calculus. There's so many things that should factor in besides the money question, but yeah.
Yeah, I know, but I think you're right. I'm saying,
I don't know. I'm not even going to link. I saved so many college articles this week, and then I didn't have time to read them. So I don't even actually know. But I do. I hope college gets better as a result of this. Let's make college great again. In time for our children to need to go to it or have it in some capacity. Yeah. I can't remember what the other thing we were going to, I'm reading this horrible book by Glennon Doyle, Melton, but I'm going to be writing about it. So I don't want to talk about it too much. I did love that. She, I think I already said this. She made selflessness into this, like, sinful, self-effacing martyrdom, self-annihilation, which isn't what it is.
So if you give yourself over for the good of the other, then you actually sinned against yourself.
You've annihilated yourself.
Yeah. So yeah, we should wait to talk about that until you finish
because the book, but it's going to be great.
Yeah, but that is interesting because that's been the norm for the secular world for a long time now. But then Glennon
Doyle Melton
is trying to find a way to put that into the church and in an objective way.
In a
Christianized way.
I mean, not Christianized though. She's just taking it. Like, she's not even trying to baptize anything. She's just announcing. She's making an announcement about the change of meanings of words. And I really, really wanted to say, like, you can't just say something and then it becomes real. I mean, you can't just announce now there's lots and lots of money and then there's lots and lots of money. You can't just say, Jesus says I can do whatever I want because that's who he is. You can't do that. Like,
what do you mean you can't? That's what everyone does.
I know everyone does, but they need to stop doing it because it's... I don't know if they've noticed, but also it's so disrespectful because you don't do that to, really, you don't do that to Muslims. Can you imagine if I just got online and was like, you know what? Muslims think this. And I just made up a bunch of stuff. The outcry would be massive. In a similar way, you shouldn't sort of search inside yourself about a religious system and then make pronouncements about what it is.
Is that what she's doing in the book? Just deciding that?
She doesn't have even the least bit of educated knowledge about Christianity. Zero. She has zero knowledge about what Christianity is as a faith, as a system of beliefs. She has no knowledge at all about Jesus. None. Or not even about what all the stuff is inside of Christianity. Because I get that it's a relationship, not a religion, but it is also kind of a religion. Like, you can study doctrine, you can study church history, you can investigate what it is that Christians believe in a systematic way, just like you would a Buddhist or anything, right? Guess how much time she spent doing that? None. No time.
Is she presenting herself as a Christian?
Yes, she is. She's presenting herself as a Christian. And apparently she can just say whatever she wants and it's the new Christianity or whatever. She's just... To which I'm saying, stop doing that because everybody's doing that now. Everybody says, I'm a Christian, all the progressive evangelicals, and stop. Just announce that you're no longer a Christian because you're not. And you wouldn't do that to any other religion. You wouldn't dare do that to Hinduism or animism in Africa. You wouldn't go to Africa to a village and be like, you know what, guys? The ancestors are actually all Jesus. You're worshiping Jesus now. That would be so disrespectful.
Well, that is kind of what the inclusivist view is, that everybody really is worshiping Jesus, even though they're worshiping their own gods. And you're right.
That is very, very, very disrespectful. And you should stop doing that because there's no end to that. There's no way to stop doing it. And it's lying. You should say, actually, I don't believe in the tenets of this faith anymore. And so I'm going to stop calling myself that name. And then Christians would be like, oh, well, may God go with you. You know, thank you for being honest about yourself. You're not a Christian anymore. That's very grievous to us, and we wish you would turn around and believe in Jesus. But thank you for being honest about yeah. it. And
well, that's why, you know, I kind of respected, what's his name? The guy who wrote I Guess Dating Goodbye.
Yeah, Josh Harris.
At least he didn't say, right. I'm a Christian who's now discovered the new, how Christianity's been wrong for the last 2,000 years.
Right. And
this is the right way to do it. We should be marching in pride parades. He didn't do that.
He didn't do that. And Brett and Link, I don't know.
Yeah, I read about that, yeah.
They also apostatized in the sense that they said we're no longer Christian, and I thought that was so helpful.
Yeah.
Good, you know. So, Sarah Bessie and Glendora Melton, Jen Hatmaker,
Rachel Hovleben
should have done this. And
what's the woman with
the Lutheran title pastor lady
of a woman part?
Yeah. That's who I'm trying to think of. Oh my gosh.
She would hate that we can't remember her name.
Pastrick. She goes by Pastrick.
That's the whole point of her ministry.
I know. Remember her name. It's completely escaped me. She, of all of them, should say, you know what, guys? I'm not a Christian. I've invented my own religion, which looks exactly like progressive, you know what? Political ideology. I'm going to call it whatever her name is. What's her name?
I'm trying to find her name.
She wrote Shameless.
Nadia Bowles Weber.
Yes. That should be the name of their new religion. Weberism. I'm going to give you a name.
Or Evansism. Hatmakerism.
There. We fixed it for you. You're not an expiant. You have a new religion. It's called Hatmakerism. You can make your own hats, and you can do whatever you want. Set up your doctrine, work it out systematically, which you're doing already. You go on and do that and stop with the Christian thing, because it doesn't resemble Christianity at all. And you haven't taken even the smallest time to find out what actual Christians believe. You rejected something that you didn't understand. You didn't take any time to investigate it. And you should acknowledge that, be honest, and say, we just weren't interested. And so yeah, we're inventing a new system of belief.
How many deconversion stories you read when and they always start off with the weirdest characteristic or caricature of the Christian faith. Yeah, in my church, like they literally beat women and children. And
every day,
they all belong to the KKK, and it's just stereotypical stories about what their home church was like, which fine, it may be in a fundamentalist church, but horrible stories about how Christianity is based on their own personal little experiences of
which they didn't
right
measure didn't up against right. anything else to find out if it was what should have been happening right. either.
And they leave, and now that, you know, someone did this. They wrote down, I forget who it was, I have to find the article, but this person described the typical deconversion story to a T. It was really nice. Who was it?
Kruger. Okay. Michael Kruger.
Yeah.
He did it with Lord of the Rings, he used the Lord of the Rings to do.
Saruman, yeah, because he's a typical.
He's a typical ex-evangelical.
Right.
That was great. Yeah. You should be honest. I mean, do you want here's what should come out of COVID? Let's all become truth tellers. Not like your own truth, like it's truth, but don't lie about yourself or what you believe. You know, don't stop doing that.
Right.
Tell the truth.
Stop it.
Yeah, stop it.
So we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we do need to.
I've got this massive pile of mulch outside that I'm super excited about. It's like this, it's 4 cubic yards.
Oh my gosh.
I've never ordered that much mulch before.
I don't know why you.
A black diamond mulch. It's like, it's really good stuff.
Why did you order so much?
Because we have a massive garden now.
I mean, okay.
And we need the mulch. We have to have the mulch to make it fertile.
Okay.
And keep the moisture in and help the plants grow.
I do feel like our garden is starting to be epic. And I had a little moment as I was driving down the road when I saw my own garden as I was driving up to my own driveway. And I thought, my garden is better than everyone else's. I wasn't being competitive at first, but now I feel competitive. There's two beautiful gardens on our street. I mean, everybody works hard on the gardens, but there's two that are sort of epically good. And I feel like in a year, mine's going to be right up there with those ones.
Yeah, if we keep it up, that's what we need to keep, that's what we need to mulch. We put down lots of mulch.
Okay. The other thing is that I was going to plant my cabbages today, but I'm now worried because everybody's complaining about cabbage destroying bugs. And I'm not sure. I've never done cabbages before. And I have 7 or 8 kinds of Chinese cabbage that I'm about to plant in my garden. They ordered online. And I'm not sure what to do. So I also have to finish my book. So this is going to be hard because I have to both garden in a frenzied and hysterical way and finish my book. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out.
But you should hire a ghostwriter.
Yeah.
Get someone to write for you while you're working.
While I'm doing my gardening. Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't finish this project right now because hashtag garden. Well, so I don't know. We'll probably be back next week because I will have just turned my book in and we will have spread the mulch. So we'll probably have tons of time and nothing going on in our lives. So I'm sure we'll be back. But until then, have a great another week of COVID.